Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program for the month today. Here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell and has done more Pets and Vet shows than any human on the face of the earth. Dr. Scharf, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Ray. I had a busy day today. I got thrown in jail for muscular dystrophy. I had to raise bail. A lot of people helped me out.
Great.
I posted bail, got out of there chop chop, and here I am. So thanks to all the people that helped me out with that.
Nice to have you here. We would have done a phoner from jail if necessary. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also check in online at wamc.org/voxpop. That's also the place where you can get all the info on how to check in via social media. It's wamc.org/voxpop. Please provide as much information as you can on your pet if you are submitting a question online, especially their age and sex, and of course, what kind of pet it is. That's very helpful. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. A lot of calls already. Let's go right to Susan in Albany. Susan, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you. I have a Great Dane. He's approximately 4 years old. It's a male. He's 150 pounds. And over the past year, he started to develop a shaking of his back, right leg predominantly. Sometimes it transitions over to the left leg. And it's like a tremor, and then he'll move his leg, and then it may stop. And he runs fine, he chases the ball, he walks fine. But it's just like it happens, it seems like it's happened a little bit more frequently. Our vet really didn't seem to be too concerned about it. He said that large breed dogs can have like a non-specific shaking disorder. I don't know. Is there anything that I need to be like, cognizant of, concerned about, or things I should look into? I mean, I worry about things like Parkinson's or, anything else, or an injury to his back. I don't know. But he seems fine. He doesn't have any issues.
Right,
other than it just shakes.
Susan,
tremoring.
Yeah, plenty of dogs have tremors, especially when they go to the vet. In other words, there's fear. There are plenty of dogs that have tremors because they have arthritis, and it hurts them in the back end, usually the back end, could be the front, hurts them to stand up or whatever. Are you saying, Susan, that there's no pain, that your Dane has no pain?
None, nothing. It's like a weird, it starts from up in like the bald, the socket area of his leg at top, and then it shakes all the way down
his back leg.
To his back leg, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And predominantly I've noticed it more on the right than the left, but it can happen on either side. He has zero pain. This dog runs, jumps.
How about upstairs? Does he go upstairs okay?
Yeah, he'll bolt upstairs, run. He'll take like 3 stairs at a time.
Really? Wow, that is kind of a puzzle. Usually, if they have a back-end tremor, there's some pain involved, there's some loss of function, they have trouble going up the stairs, that kind of thing. Either your vet is correct and it's nothing to worry about, or it's a spinal problem, because spinal can affect both legs, unless he's got two bum hips at the same time, or two bum, knees at the same time. Spinal is a possibility, so you try pinching along down his spine, see if there's any tenderness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing. I mean, we can, pat on him, manipulate his legs, do anything to him. He has no tenderness.
Wow.
He runs, he will actually take laps around the house like a galloping horse.
And he's five?
Four.
Four. Did you take any blood work, Susan?
Not recently. He does have a vet appointment coming up next week.
Yeah, try just making sure his electrolytes are in the right ranges, because electrolyte disorders can sometimes cause some muscle tremor, potassium, and that kind of
thing. So that's a dietary thing you could fix?
Mm-hmm. It depends. There are many things that could cause potassium, for instance, to be in the wrong range. Diet is one of them, but there are plenty of diseases also that could cause it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How about any like Lyme disease or anything?
Yeah, Lyme is a possibility. We test for Lyme every year. Mm-hmm. And if he hasn't been tested, that should absolutely be done. Usually it's done at the time of the heartworm test, which is yearly.
All right. So, Susan, the timing of the vet checkup is perfect. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Andy in Holyoke, Massachusetts. Andy.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, I have a 8-month-old female yellow lab pup. She's about 30 pounds, and she always seems to have either diarrhea or a loose stool. Now, we've gone to the vet once, and they gave us some probiotics, which seemed to help a little bit. I mean, we've tried varying her diet,
Yeah, we were having a rough connection there. You said you tried varying her diet, and then we lost you.
Oh, yeah, and we use like chicken and rice, for a week to see if that'll make a difference. But no muck. Regardless of what we seem to feed her, she always seems to be loose.
All
should
right.
I be concerned?
Okay.
Okay, so Andy, I assume that your vet has ruled out that there are parasites going on.
Yes, there were no worms.
Excellent. So parasites and what we call dietary indiscretion account for over 90% of any diarrhea that a puppy gets. Okay, in other words, 90% of the time is because they're putting something in their mouth that they shouldn't be. This is assuming that you've ruled out parasites. Okay. Now,
yeah.
Sure, it's possible, Andy, they could have some kind of dietary intolerance or allergy or et cetera, but that's very unlikely. At 8 months of age, and I assume that she's been doing it for several months now.
Yeah.
So for a dog at 4 months or 5 months of age to have an allergy or is unlikely but possible. Dietary indiscretion is far and away the most common thing. There are other possibilities. I mean, dogs could be born with bum pancreases, in other words, something called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, but I don't think that it's that, because that would be a very malodorous, fetid, gloppy kind of stool. Sorry to turn anyone off there.
Thanks.
Hope you're not eating lunch. Yeah. Sorry, Ray.
It's all right.
Bottom line, Andy, there are various things that it could be, but the most likely thing, if she's acting fine, she's gaining weight, her appetite's good, is just that she's getting into stuff she shouldn't be getting into. Mm. That's what puppies do. That's their job.
Well, her appetite is fine, but recently, over the last 2 or 3 weeks or so, she really hasn't been gaining weight.
Well, then I would recheck the stool, Andy. I would make sure that you didn't overlook something the first time. There could be false negatives or recent exposures since that last stool specimen was done.
You mean to parasites?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Worms, giardia, coccidia, single-celled organism. Or you could empirically just treat her against the parasites. And there's no medication that'll take care of all parasites, Andy. But one of the ones that'll do a lot of them is something called Panacure, which a lot of vets have. It's a liquid you give for 3 to 5 days. I would go 5 days because it could take care of giardia, too, that way. And sometimes just empirically warming them and keeping a close eye on her that she's not getting into some kind of carcass in the woods or whatever. Would go a long way. And then, when you say you tried chicken and rice, I want to make sure. I was just talking to Alan about Murray and an upset stomach.
Uh-oh.
It's not just chicken and rice. It's boiled chicken. So you could
skim
off the fat.
Chicken.
Good. It doesn't have to be chicken. It could be boiled hamburger, too. But it's also white rice. Not minute rice, not brown rice. You want to give stuff that's easy for the system to digest. And that's where the small amounts, and that's where the no fat comes in. So you start her off. She's 30 pounds. Maybe a couple teaspoons of that boiled chicken and rice combination, 1-to-1. And then a few hours later, you give 2 or 3 teaspoons, and then 5 or 8. And then every few hours, you build it up so that our system is getting nutrition, but it's getting the least challenging nutrition. Now, bear in mind, growing dog, it's not a full, complete, and balanced nutrition for a dog that needs all those nutrients, but for a week or a week and a half, it's not the worst thing in the world. You could also give her a vitamin supplement if you need.
Okay, that's great. We'll definitely take a stool sample back and have that tested again. And the medication that you mentioned, could you say that again?
It's one example of several, but it's been around a long time. It's fenbendazole. It's spelled Panacure, Panacur.
Okay.
So that's a good one for an empirical thing to do.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. That was great.
Sure thing, Andy.
Andy, we appreciate the call, and thank you, everyone, for tuning in. It is a Pets and Vet Show, as you may have guessed. It's Dr. Ron Scharf, and your calls at 1-800-348-2551. And back with more of your calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Whiston Spurn, now on view. Exhibition-related programs and more, smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Ye Old Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. And Term Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, and termhealthcare.com. Springhouse Spa, Sharon Springs, New York, a modern-day spa in a historic setting. Offering Mother's Day gift certificates online, springhousespa.com. And the Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, serving not-for-profits and individual investors, Mary McDonald, Financial Advisor, and Joseph Steinacher, CFP, Financial Advisor, thebeechwoodgroup.com.
Fox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets, Ray Graff here along with Dr. Ron Scharf, and your calls at 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Dina in Monticello. Dina, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello?
You're on.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about my dog, who's a 3-year-old black lab. He had surgery 3 months ago to repair a torn ACL and a floating patella or kneecap. He's not totally recovered, but he's, you know, it's much better. Meanwhile, this past week, he got an abscess in his neck, and 3 days later, tore the other leg. So the hospital doesn't want to do the surgery to repair the leg until the abscess is healed, which it was doing better, and then all of a sudden it blew up. It's like the size of a grapefruit. The problem is also that he can't, so he's completely immobile. He's lame. He's just laying there in pain. He's on pain meds, but it's still, he's just not comfortable or happy. I'm just wondering, I can't seem to get the hospital, not that I can't get them to do something, but I'm speaking to two different departments, the orthopedic and then the soft tissue department. So one is saying, well, the abscess is not an emergency, but I feel like if he doesn't get that abscess taken care of, then he can't get the leg repaired. And while he can't do anything, it's going to atrophy, and then he won't, you know, he'll end up getting all this done, and he'll just be like a lame dog.
Okay.
Dina, that sounds like a pretty particularly bad abscess. Was it cultured? Do you know if a sample was sent for incubation? And so you found out what bacteria was and what the best antibiotics to use would be?
It was, the culture was taken. The lab said that his blood is fine, but there is bacteria. Our vet gave him an antibiotic. I couldn't tell you the name off the top of my head.
That's okay.
But he said he likes it a lot because he feels like it does very well with abscesses, and it was doing well.
How long has he had the abscess?
I think it started around 5 days ago.
Is it draining?
Not very much at all. When I put a hot compress on it, just barely anything. And the doctor did try to, aspirate it. Like he put he drew out what he could,
right,
but then
right.
He couldn't get it. It wouldn't come out anymore. But then it did start getting better, and then I don't know why it just.
Okay.
Maybe he needs a drain. Maybe he needs a piece of rubber put in there, a Penrose drain or something to facilitate more drainage. Because if the hole closes over, it could build up pressure and cause him to feel bad. But also, if there's drainage, Dina, it makes it less dangerous to do a surgery elsewhere. You don't want to do a surgery elsewhere if it's possibly in his bloodstream, but you didn't say he's acting sick or his appetite is off. He's doing okay otherwise?
No, he was okay until once he tore, you know, he tore the ACL in the other leg. He can't walk. He was eating, but then he feels like he's warm.
Ah.
So
well,
we were just hoping.
Sick. Yeah, if he's sick, it's not a good time to do an elective procedure.
But do you have any idea, like, how long does it take for an abscess? Like, let's say he had surgery done on the abscess instead. Does he have to wait weeks before he can repair the other leg?
No. No. Here's what it is. First of all, I asked about the culture and sensitivity because there are some bacteria, such as MRSA, you might have heard of,
that are
resistant, that are harder to cure and take longer, and you have to use special antibiotics, and, you know, sometimes there are side effects. So I'd be curious, number one, is it a MRSA or some similarly challenging bacterium? Because if it's not, then he ought to have that thing taken, that ought to be on the way to being pretty resolved within, I'd say, a week and a half, you know, something like that.
So 5 days is pretty early.
It's only been 5 days. It may not have gone a long enough time, but if there's adequate drainage, if there's a way for the bad stuff, the pus, the bacteria, to get out, that's the important thing, and it ought to continue to heal every day. It should look a little better. So if it's not, I'd wonder if there's adequate drainage or if the right antibiotic was chosen or if it's being administered according to the correct directions.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so first have that taken care of and then...
Dina, if you have to wait an extra week or two to do the surgery, it's not the worst thing in the world. If you have to wait a month or two, then there could be some arthritis setting in.
Okay.
Due to the instability.
It's so heartbreaking to see him.
Sure. But it's not an emergency. The ACL, you want to get it fixed ASAP, but it's not an emergency.
Okay.
Sooner the better. Okay.
All right,
all.
Dina, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Regina in Saratoga Springs. You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was wondering about my dog who's 10. Her name is Juno, and she's a shepherd mix. She's about 70 pounds. So she's kind of petite, and she has arthritis in her spine. And the vet gave me a medication called Metcam.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay. It's very expensive,
mm-hmm.
but she responded to it really well. It
mm-hmm.
really helped her with her walks, and
mm-hmm.
She's jumping around, having a great time. And so she's definitely acting like she's got a lot more mobility with it.
Good.
Except that it costs like $30, and it
right.
gets you through about a week.
Right.
So I was wondering, what would you recommend? Like, what's more, I know this is kind of like a new medicine. What would be more likely to be affordable and that I could buy for her, like, in more bulk? I'm not familiar with, like, anti-inflammatories for dogs, so I don't know
right.
what I should be looking at rather than that.
So there is a generic form, Regina, of Medicam. It's called Meloxicam, and it's totally available. Now, bear in mind, it's off-label. In other words, the Medicam has its label for use in dogs. The Meloxicam, the generic, does not. But that's usually not a problem. But the Meloxicam is much cheaper by far. And so if the Medicam does the job, the Meloxicam will also most likely do the same job and provide as much improvement as the Medicam. But as with all NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory should be always given with a meal. They're usually most
yep.
of them once a day. And
okay.
if you want to watch out for any kind of upset stomach because it could cause ulcers, so you want to
okay.
watch out for vomiting, diarrhea, inappetence, etc. And
okay.
lastly, I often will recommend doing a blood test just to make sure there are five or so out of 10,000 dogs that'll have a bad reaction internally to the NSAIDs, liver, kidney, etc. So there's a blood
okay.
test that you could do to make sure. If you want to make sure,
you say
that,
5 out of 10.
Yeah, it's real good odds. That's why I don't require the blood test to renew it with my clients, but I do
all
recommend
right.
it. It's good.
Well, 5 out of 10 is pretty high odds.
5 out of 10,000.
Oh, 10,000.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I
those
see.
Those are acceptable odds.
I see. Yeah, that's
all right,
fair.
Great.
Okay,
thank
great.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
You're
a lot.
Welcome, Gina. Good luck.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest on this Pets and Vets Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Marie in Schenectady. Marie.
Hi. Yeah, I have a black male cat, about 5 years old. He is presenting with extra skin and... the fur is growing on it under his neck. He had one a serious operation when he was bit by a dog next door. He survived, and it healed. Soon after that, it seemed, this is about 2 years ago, he's had this condition about 8 months, and the vet took a biopsy. Clinically, he didn't know what it is, like an anomaly or genetic or something. My cat, Zorba, is very active. He doesn't intermingle with other cats. We've got a fenced yard, but he does go out. Can you determine? He took a biopsy, but didn't present with cancer.
Good. Well, so you're saying that there's redundant skin under the neck, and it started after he was bitten
like
by the dog?
Fatty, not palpable. I don't want to sound like a smart, you know what, but just simply it doesn't seem like, you know, individual, growths or anything. Just this, is it something like indigenous to mange or something in a cat?
Well, are there any
or is it from post-operation or something? What?
Marie, are there any skin changes or is it just extra skin? There's no redness?
Just that extra skin, Dr. Shaw, under his neck, and I just felt him again as he got up to have something to eat inside and some water. And I don't know. It's around that area of his neck, and you know it has grown. But can you shed any light at all?
No, I don't know what it is.
Is it like a jowl? I'm having trouble visualizing this.
Yeah, it sounds like
layer of fat growing under his skin.
Well, is he overweight?
A little, but not a lot for about 15 pounds. You know, probably
I try to lose some of the weight.
12, 13, as a fit, not 20 pounds or something like that, you know.
You might want to try to lose 2 or 3 pounds off him, but I doubt that.
How does that relate to what you're communicating
if he was overweight and, Marie, he had some too much body insulation, and that can make the skin stretch. And I'd wonder about something like that. You could also probably just take it out surgically if it bothers you. I don't know if there's a need to do that. I don't know if it's bothering
you. As you're asking that question, no, just to wait and see. Other than, hey, we can do this. I said, I don't think so.
I'd leave it alone if it's not bothering him, if it's not interfering with his quality of life. Watch it. See what happens. Maybe take a couple pounds off.
How does the extra weight, Dr. Sharp, relate to what you're saying? You know, does it cause, you know, the body, his endocrine system, his whatever, to grow that extra, fatty tissue, whatever we're talking about?
No, I doubt. I wasn't thinking as complicated as endocrine problems. I was just thinking about possibilities of things you could do that might address the situation. I don't know if he's overweight, but I do know that most animals are, most pets are, and sometimes
What did you just say, Dr. Sharp? Most animals what?
Most pets are overweight.
I know. I'm aware.
And oftentimes that weight will cause them to have extra skin that they don't need.
Oh, that's one analytical. Okay.
I'm just covering bases.
Yeah.
That's all.
Thank you very, very much for
your
help.
You're welcome, Marie.
Thanks a lot, Marie. Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf here on Pets and Vets, and David in Pittsfield. David.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Look, we got a dog from a shelter, and he's a terrier, mixed breed type dog. Likes to chase squirrels and rodents and things like that. But one thing he does that puzzles me is in the morning when the sunlight comes through, like our kitchen window, and things maybe reflect or shine, he chases the sunbeams. Hmm. And he gets all excited, and he chases them, or something reflects. Is that an issue?
Well, he's either very happy or he's crazy.
Okay.
Nice.
I would say very happy. I mean, I assume he's a young cat, David?
He's a dog.
He's a young dog?
Terry, about a year and a half.
Yeah, I think he's just being a puppy.
Well, the other thing, too, is my wife and my granddaughter, they went to the pound and picked him out, took him home. Apparently somebody said that in his earlier life, though, he was teased with a laser, one of the laser, the wands there that you shine on things and you use for making, you know, pointing out.
Yeah, laser stuff. Pointer.
Yeah,
well, if that was his only avenue of enjoyment when he was a puppy, then it would go some ways to explain why he would be that into it now, because yeah, that was his only outlet, his only fun. So that's a possibility, sure.
So it's nothing to worry about if he wants to chase a sunbeam.
Oh, leave him alone. Leave him alone when they chase that, when they chase their tails. I mean, when you have to start being concerned, David, is when they do it obsessively.
Yeah.
Okay.
Continuously. You know, for many minutes at a time, for half an hour, for an hour. That's a stereotypy that would not be considered normal. From what I hear about what you're saying, I think you're looking at a happy and enthusiastic, playful dog.
Is there any way to control him when he sees a squirrel, he just won't go off like a gunshot and drag you with him and going after it?
Pretty much no. you could try a whole lot of behavior modification. I would not recommend it.
Yeah.
No, that's what they do. That's what his job is. That's what he thinks his job is. He would be falling down on the job if he weren't chasing that squirrel. That's my understanding. That's his marching orders, David.
Okay, so I won't worry too much that he about him chasing the sunbeams, the reflections.
No, unless you're close to the squirrel, I wouldn't worry.
Yeah, I know. That's or my wife is hanging out and
right.
We dragged with him. So okay, well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Sure thing.
Appreciate it. Very much. Now, I mean, what about, let's go inside the heads of these critters. A cat that chased a light of sunlight or glinting.
That's common.
Yeah. Why then would it be out of the ordinary for a dog?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. I do often try to get into the head of a dog or a cat. That's even more challenging. I think that it has to do with their prey instinct, is my assumption, that cats have a very strong prey instinct, and things that are moving, things that are fast motions, attract the eye of a predator more than things that are slow. Okay?
Mm.
So those laser lights are moving fast. Why it's not as attractive to a dog, I think
based it would be different on it for a different breed. A hunting dog might find that more interesting.
Maybe. I tried it with my dog. I have a retriever, and she was too smart, and she figured out that it was coming from my hand. And so she was doing it at first and having a great time, and then she got smarter than me, and then she
Wow. So you're saying that dogs are smarter than cats?
No. I'm saying that it depends what you expect them to do. This is a perennial question and argument. I think that it depends what you're expecting them to do before you could say whether or not they're smart.
All right, fair enough. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest on this Pets and Vets program. Let's go over to Bob in Saratoga. Bob, you're on.
Hello, Bob.
I have a question. I have a cat, and I believe she had something called a hematoma in her ear.
Hematoma.
Hematoma?
Yes,
now,
sir.
Is that just blood from scratching your ear, perhaps with fleas?
It's serum with blood. It's like dilute blood, basically.
Okay. Now, they gave me some Animax quadripone ointment and a pregnisolone tablets.
Okay.
And they basically said something like the tablets are to prevent the cat from shaking the medicine out of the ears.
Well,
I take it that it tranquilizes the cat or something?
That's part of it. No, it's not a tranquilizer. The prednisone is a cortisone-like medication, Bob. And part of it is to stop the trauma that's causing or exacerbating the hematoma. So in other words, when they're shaking their head so hard, okay, it busts a blood vessel and it accumulates in that pinna, that's the flat part of the ear, okay? And it could get worse, it could get bigger. And if you get that head shake done, if you stop the itch, which is what prednisone does, and you also need to fix the infection that's in the ear, then they could heal better when they're not shaking their head. The more they shake their head, the less it's going to heal.
What is the best way of getting the pill into the cat?
Good question.
Okay. So there are several ways, Bob. What you want to do is, first you could try a pill pocket, which is this doughy kind of barrel that you put the pred into. It's a small pill typically, or you could smash it up and sprinkle it into a meatball, you know, give to the cat, or a cheese ball. You could also get it in a liquid form. You could have it compounded at a pharmacy. There are many ways to do it. There's also An injection of a corticosteroid called Depo-Medrol, which is an injection that lasts 2 to 3 weeks. So that's another possibility. But
let me write that injection down. It's what was it? Can you spell it or
Depo is D E P O.
Okay, sorry, I gotta get something hard to write.
Let's move fairly quickly. All right, Bob.
Depo
Medrol. M E D R O L.
Oh, M E D. R O L.
Yes, sir.
That's Medrol or Depo-Medrol, you
yes,
said?
Yes, sir.
D E P O M E D M E R O L. And it's an injection, you said?
Yes.
Okay, I'll ask about that. Thank you.
Thanks,
you're
Bob.
Welcome.
We appreciate it. More compelling radio here at Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551 is a telephone number. Yeah, it's Ron Sharp. Yeah, it's Pets and Vets. And yeah, the home stretch is coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Boeing Boeing by Mark Camaletti, weekends through May 4th in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Water Furnace Systems, a green heating and cooling system, geothermal energy, an alternative energy source, waterfurnace.com for dealer locations. Sweater Venture East Greenbush, 35 years of working globally and locally to help preserve and promote fair trade knitting in natural fibers for all seasons. SweaterVenture.com. Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep boarding and day school for students with learning disabilities and ADD, featuring a 5-week summer session, EHS1.org for info. And Subsidium Technologies, working to help enterprises use custom communications and cloud services to help improve information technology environments. SubsidiumTech.com.
Hello, everyone. It's Vox Pop. It's Pets and Vets. It's 19 minutes now before 3 o'clock. Here's one from email, Dr. Sharf. Amber writes, my dog got skunked last night. What's a good option to get rid of or mediate the odor? What can humans use for themselves, too?
There are several things, Amber. There are a lot of people that like to use Dawn dishwashing detergent.
Why
tomato
that
juice.
Name brand? Why? In other words, can't it just be generic?
Probably, yes. It was always Dawn in my mind, but you're probably right. Maybe it's got a kind of perfume that is better. One way that I've done it over many years is just to soak the dog in tomato juice, leave it on the dog, a total body, for 5 or 10 minutes, rinse it off, and then do it another 3-4 times. The problem with skunks is that they're most often in the face, and you can't bathe the dog's face. You have to be very careful. You don't get any dishwashing detergent. I think a lot of people use mouthwash, Scop mouthwash. Why is it Scop? I don't know. Do they even make Scop anymore? I don't know. To do it many times is the trick, and to, if possible, without endangering the dog's eyes, especially to get something on the face, because that's where the most of the skunk smell is coming from. And the biggest reason why, no matter how many times you bathe them with the tomato juice, with the Scope, with the Dawn dishwashing detergent, they're still going to have a stench to some degree because of the face. So that's the tricky part.
Okay, well, that's a great question. Thank you for your email, Amber. And let's go back to the phones. Bill in Albany. Bill, you're on with Dr. Ron Sharf.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm calling because about my dog. We noticed about 2 weeks ago that her right nostril was clear. Her left nostril was blocked with like a hard, crusty, for lack of a better term, a booger. And so we took her to the vet, and the vet took her into the back room and removed this hard piece of crust from her left nostril. And then she put the dog on antibiotics for 2 weeks. And we've been using saline and also a Q-tip dipped in Vaseline to try to soften the hard, crusty booger, if you will. And we've
lovely.
Also been trying to hot pack it as well to soften it. And then, if she'll allow us, and it's very difficult because her nose is sensitive, et cetera, take a Q-tip and try to remove this hard, black, crusty booger, if you will. Any recommendations?
By the way, Bill, before he answers your question, you have said booger more than anyone in the history of radio in a short period of time. So let's move on.
Quite the distinction there. So was it a discharge? Was it a thick? Was it a yellow or a green discharge, Bill?
No, it was hard black crust.
Yeah, but it starts as a liquid, doesn't it?
We didn't notice. My wife said that she does, her nose does run now and then. But again, now it's clear, she tells me.
So that means that the antibiotics are helping.
She said the running nose was clear.
Oh, from the beginning. Well, it could have been a viral infection. It could be an allergy. This is an allergy season. So
we were thinking of that, too. Would the antibiotics have helped for that?
No. If it's an allergy, I would try run an antihistamine. And if that doesn't do it, you could try something stronger like a prednisone.
Is that something we can get over the counter, or do we have to go to the vet and ask the vet for that?
Antihistamine you can get over the counter. Pred, you can't.
Oh, the antihistamine, yeah.
Yes.
All right.
I'm not sure if it's an allergy or not, but if it's a thin discharge, if it's a serous, you know, watery discharge, that would be one of the things that I would wonder about.
No, this is black hard crust.
The crust, if it's not something that started as a liquid, then I'd almost wonder more about some kind of keratinization disorder where the keratin kind of takes over the tip of the nose. Some dogs get that. But the crusting could also be from infection. So I think that an antibiotic is a good thing. And I would also put some ointment on that nostril, kind of what the previous caller mentioned. Animax is one of them, or Panalog, to put onto the crust itself after the saline cleanse. Think about the antihistamine, too.
Okay, Bill, thanks. Go ahead.
Can we buy that at the drugstore?
No, the Animax would be something you get at the vet, too.
Okay, and Ray, I won't say booger again.
Oh, you just did.
You just did.
Thanks, Bill. See you around. We appreciate it. Wise guy.
Wise guy
PJ
yeah.
and Half Moon. PJ, you're on.
Oh, thank you, Ray and Dr. Shore. I just have two parts here, two questions. The first one is, and I'll just do them both. You can decide what you wish to reply about. But the first one is, what do you think about animal acupuncture? This is quite ancient. I know the military has point pressures, and this is what acupuncture probably is. But the next thing, though, is considers with what I think might be ethical, philosophical considerations about animals, the animal creature thing. I had a friend that worked in a laboratory with the animals in GE one time, and some of them got out, you know. And so we wonder about, is there a way, if there are excesses in the animal experimentation, like animal Nazis, where to report these type of such
okay.
things?
All right. Well, let's start with acupuncture.
Okay. So acupuncture, PJ, I totally believe in, and I've been doing it since 1987 or 88. And it's helped a whole lot of the patients that I've had with various conditions, the most common of which is disc disease and arthritis. Far and away, the greatest successes I've had in my personal experience are with animals with bum discs, you know, herniated disc, ruptured disc, narrow disc spaces, etc. So I totally recommend it.
What do you do?
Needles.
How do you know where to stick the needle?
Oh, you look at the dog, you do a traditional Chinese medical exam, you do a regular physical exam, and then you check the points on the bladder meridian, which is where all the other organs tie up into. It's on the spine on both sides, and it'll give you an idea of either local or distant problems. For instance, most musculoskeletal problems, you need to use something called bladder 23. It's the association point for the kidneys on the bladder meridian, and it's toward the back of the rib cage on top. And the kidney, in the Chinese scheme of things, is responsible for bone.
Is this something they teach at Cornell?
No.
Where'd you pick it up?
I picked it up at a lecture that I went to, and then I got certified by the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society.
Yeah, I can remember seeing those books hanging out.
Oh, yeah, they're great. So the acupuncture, I totally believe in, PJ. I think it's a great thing, and it's a very nice tool to have when I get hurt in dogs or cats. I do it in cats, too. As far as the lab animals and the creature thing.
Yes.
You're asking, you're right. It's a philosophical question, PJ, and reasonable people can disagree. So what it means is that there are some people that are more into animal rights, and there are some people that are more into animal welfare. So the welfare is the humans as husbands, or responsible for the husbandry of the animals, making sure that their welfare is good. Animal rights, on the other hand, states that we cannot subject a sentient being who is independent of us to do anything we want with them, such as animal studies. And so it depends where you fall on that philosophical divide, PJ, as to whether or not you're going to agree with lab animals being used in experiments. I personally do think that it is justified. However, when I was in veterinary school and they had a physiology lab, and in that lab they used rabbits and they were testing what the vagus nerve does, and the whole experiment was to take their pulse and blood pressure, and then after that cut the vagus nerve, which is a cranial nerve, it's major, and then check the pulse and blood pressure afterwards. And it was a terminal experiment. The animals were put to sleep after that. I personally refused to do it, got into a lot of trouble, was threatened to not be able to graduate from vet school because physiology was a requirement, and without that lab, I couldn't pass physiology. I'm happy to say that they let me slide, and I was able to graduate. And then the following year, I didn't see that lab in the physiology lab. So,
how about that?
You know, it's your own judgment, PJ, but I personally think it's a gray zone. I mean, I do think that there are some justifications, and others I think are frivolous and not justified.
All right, let's go to Janet in Albany. Janet, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Yes, I have a 40-year-old black cat, and he seems to be afraid of noises. It doesn't matter whether it's the doorbell or someone knocking at the door or just someone coming over and handing something to me. A lot of the times he likes to be on my lap, and when he hears a noise, especially on my, you know, if he's on my lap, he'll claw me to get away from the noise that he's afraid of. I was wondering if he needs to be put on medicine.
Okay.
I would try to avoid medicine, Janet, for something that's really like a personality thing, unless it was really interfering with his quality of life or your quality of life. I'd rather not put an animal. Usually for that kind of thing, we use antidepressants like Prozac. Fluoxetine is the generic name. And I would, if you really had the motivation, try some behavioral modification. Whether or not it would work with a cat's hard to say, but it would require a lot of time and effort for you to kind of acclimate him to noises by getting a recording and playing the recording at a very low level and stroking him and giving him positive reinforcement, treats and everything for him being relaxed with it, and then turning the volume up just a little bit, and then if he's relaxed, giving him the treats and petting him, etc., and then turning it up. And over the course of weeks or months, you may be able to get that noise up to a level which would desensitize him to when it happens in real life. Operative orders may. I mean, you may not be able to, but I using a medication for that, Janet, I don't know if it's justified personally, but that's an opinion. That's my two cents.
Okay.
Right.
I would try to acclimate to it yourself.
Right, but if he's on my lap and he's afraid of the loud noise from the tape recorder,
sure,
and he runs off my lap, do I just tell him no?
No,
or?
You don't do the tape recorder too big an increment from the low-level volume that he was okay with. You
okay.
Want to go a tiny, tiny bit more than that over the course of many weeks or months,
okay,
so that
right.
You don't make too big a jump.
All right.
Okay.
Janet, thank you very much. Let's go to Paul in Chesterfield, Mass. Paul, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. My dog, Bo, is a lab, about 100 pounds, and one of our younger family members was trying to give him a holistic medicine with a glass dropper, you know, with a little rubber bulb, and Bo ate it.
Wow.
Do you know if he chewed it, Paul?
Yeah.
He chewed it?
No, I think he just swallowed it straight down.
Well, depending upon how big it is, there's a possibility it might pass in a big guy like that. When did it happen?
It actually happened. It's going on about 2 weeks now. We called the emergency vet, and they gave us instructions for feeding him. And, you know, we did the whole rice and chicken thing for a while. And, you know, going out at night when he, you know, went to the bathroom with a flashlight and no signs of blood, no signs of anything. And he seems to be fine. But the question is, where is that dropper?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I would take an X-ray, see if it shows up.
That's what I was wondering, whether or not to bring him to our regular vet and have an X-ray.
I would definitely take an X-ray. Now, sometimes glass doesn't show up on an X-ray, but I think in this case it would. I think it's likely that it would.
It has the plastic piece and the rubber stopper as well. The question is there a special place in a lab's stomach for all the junk that they eat?
Yeah, really. You would think so. Like a four-compartment stomach like a cow. Sure, like a ruminant. A ruminant dog. What I would do is, if you do take an X-ray, Paul, I would bring a similar glass stopper and put the glass dropper in the X-ray field just so that you can make sure that it is showing up. Because if that one doesn't, then the one inside the dog won't.
Mm.
Just to have a little...
Gotcha.
A little confidence there.
Now, over time, will the stomach acid eventually eat that glass away? No, it'll be there forever?
Yeah, unless it breaks or causes problems.
That'll be a problem, right?
But, you know, foreign bodies oftentimes pass. As a matter of fact, cats love needles, and that's a big problem because, you know, the needles are attached to string. The cats are intrigued with the string. Sometimes they get so involved with it that they decide to consummate their relationship by ingesting it.
Yeah.
And it depends on which... end of the needle goes down first.
Yeah.
Because if the blunt end goes down first, it'll pass. And if the blunt end does not go down first, it'll get stuck in the mouth or the throat or somewhere else.
Okay. Well, hey, Paul, thanks a lot and good luck. Let's go to Paul in Rutland, Vermont. Paul, you're on. You only have a couple of minutes here.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I have a four-year-old pug, a female pug, who up until about 6 months ago, I fed conventional dog food. About 6 months ago, I noticed she started to rub on the carpet quite a bit in a circle, and when we were taking her out, she had blood in her urine. Well, the sample came back as she contracted a urinary tract infection and put on an antibiotic and immediately put on prescription urinary tract dog food. My problem is it's three times since that she has gone back for treatment and only to go back on antibiotics. So my question is twofold. One, Why after so long would she all of a sudden contract these infections? And two, how come it isn't subsided? Could it be something deeper than just simply a diet change?
Well, you might want to take an X-ray, Paul, just to make sure there's no stones in there, because animals can get stones. And if there's a bladder stone in there, those crystals and the infection will recur if indeed
they
it
did.
Ever went away.
They initially did an X-ray, and there was no stone, so they eliminated that.
Good.
So
I would also find out what kind of crystals are in there to make sure that the prescription food she's on is the best one to use.
Okay. I'm getting the prescription food from the same vet. Should I change vet? Should that be a consideration?
I think that if the vet is using the right prescription food, it ought to do the job. But if it keeps on recurring, then I would do a culture and sensitivity of the urine when the dog's been off antibiotics for 5 days, just to see if there's any bacteria still in there, and if so, which are they, and what are the best antibiotics to use. And between using the antibiotics predicted from the culture and sensitivity plus the prescription food, that ought to take care of it, unless there is either a stone that didn't show up on the regular X-ray, which is possible but unusual, or some other problem that is causing the recurrent infections, like an anatomical problem, something wrong in the anatomy, or diverticulum in the front of the bladder, or various other things that are possible, if not common.
Paul, I'm afraid that is where we will have to leave it. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks to everybody who called in today. Support comes from the Unitarian Universalist congregations with locations in the Capital Region and beyond, welcoming families to worship together, capitalregionuu.org. Shedman Custom Woodworks, building garden and storage sheds, gazebos, and outdoor furniture for over 25 years. New Lebanon and Brunswick, New York. Shedman.com for inventory. Oblong Books, Hudson Valley YA Society, presenting a book launch party for Jennifer Donnelly and her book Deep Blue, Sunday, May 4th, 4 p.m. in Rhinebeck. RSVP requested, oblongbooks.com. And The Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio presenting Willie Nile and his band with special guests, the Jefferson Grizzard Band, Saturday, May 17th at 8 p.m., thelinda.org. Thanks to you for calling in. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. The great Dr. Ron Scharf, thank you very much for being here. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Make sure you take WAMC with you. Download our new mobile app at the iTunes or Google Play App Store. Search WAMC at install. Tomorrow, oh, what a show we have for you tomorrow. I'm not even going to tell you what it is. I'm not sure what it is, but I wouldn't tell you anyway.